This is Spectrum West. Hi, everybody. I'm Al Ross, another program filled to the brim. And here's what and who you're going to hear today. Kenny Holman, very respected musician, one of the most innovative saxophone players you'll find anywhere. And you'll find him next Tuesday at the Mabel Tainter Center in Menominee, enjoying playing time with the Menominee High School Jazz Ensemble 1. We'll get to know Kenny a little bit better today. The Eau Claire Chamber Orchestra provides some samples of Italian Baroque in a Saturday evening concert that features several special guests, including a visiting conductor, Frank Watkins, who shares his perspective today. Jim Oliver's here with another Jim Zimmerman with news about what's going on at the St. Croix Off-Broadway Dinner Theater. That's in Hudson. Arts West 37 is on display at the Ellie Phillips Memorial Public Library in Eau Claire. Issa Small stops by with information. And here's our jumping off point on this first program of March 2016. The Mabel Tainter Center for the Arts is going to be a busy place in coming days, most notably from band instruments, in addition to the Menominee High School Jazz Show that we mentioned Tuesday. A few days later, the Norseman Band, originating on the campus of St. Olaf College in Northfield, Minnesota, will be guests of Western Wisconsin's own Ludington Guard Band. The Norseman Band director is, and has been for many years, Paul Nemisto, who gave us some phone time for a look at some remarkable musical heritage. First, you know, we should recognize the band's birthday. It's 50 years old this year, and from the looks of the band right now, it doesn't look a day over maybe 23. Back in 1966, man, that's a while ago. Do you try to pass along this wonderful feeling of heritage to everybody who becomes part of this group?
Well, I'm kind of a history guy.
Okay.
But, you know, your average 21-year-old, unless they have a special interest, or it's not a part of their usual lists of things that they do is to trace the roots of things. So
sure,
we have to kind of encourage them to do this. Yeah, I think it's part of what teaching is to show background and to show the connection between what happened 30 years or 40 years or 50 years ago and today.
Mm-hmm. I never thought I'd get to a point in my life where 1966 was ancient history, but it kind of is.
I wasn't involved in those years, of course. I was graduating from high school that year, so it's not like something I remember. But I know about who did it, and it was one of our dear colleagues, Miles Johnson, who was the guru of band music at St. Olaf College for years and years, and he at one point thought there were a few more students around the campus that were not playing in anything that he needed to start a second band. That's what he did.
Oh, so that's the second band. Okay, I was going to say, it seems to me a little odd that a college as well known as St. Olaf didn't have a band, but they did. This is just the second one. That's cool.
Right. Well, the other one, actually, the band, the real history of St. Olaf is that the band is the oldest musical ensemble on campus. The band is actually celebrating its 125th year.
Oh, wow.
And although the general public out there thinks of this is as the St. Olaf Choir College, badly put, it in fact is younger than the band. The band is the oldest ensemble.
So now for listeners who may not be familiar with the term, explain briefly what a symphonic band is.
Well, a symphonic band, also some perpetrators call it a symphony band.
Okay.
It just means that the band is using as its model for performing is has some relation to the symphony orchestra, and that it's trying to get a more mellow, more varied sets of sounds. Usually, if you look at the list of instruments, it might be some lower clarinets, a couple of extra bassoons. It'll have a wider variety of percussion instruments, and then the size also, the fact that it's the traditional American band in the communities of 100 years ago or so, you know, we're about a 40-piece group pretty much specializing in marches and overtures and such things. And the symphonic band will actually try to do quote-unquote symphonic style music with a little more deepness to its meaning and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Although I think that some of this is a little bit artificial in that what really happens, it's going to be in the hands of the conductor to decide what the band's going to sound like and what it's going to play.
Mm-hmm. I think we've already established that St. Olaf is known for music.
That is certainly true, and although it's known for other things as well, it's one of the one of the most prolific math departments in the United States. It's got an incredible science department with physics and chemistry and biology, new building that's just state-of-the-art. Hmm. So what actually happens is the college attracts students who had a very successful high school career in music, as well as academic interests on the outside. So the two together combine well here. A student can either be a chemistry major and then play a lot or sing a lot, mm-hmm. or could also actually take a major in music along with the chemistry. These are both possible. Huh. And a lot of schools that are of a higher caliber have a pretty good firewall between the music department and the rest of the academic programs. So mm-hmm. we're unusual in that sense.
You know, and we hear about and use the term St. Olaf all the time because you guys are prolific in you know, making a name for yourself. But now that I think of it, I'm going to have to look up who the heck this St. Olaf guy was. He must have been pretty cool. I'm not expecting you to give me the history, but I'm going to
look. I think probably how cool he was is a matter of perspective. He was a churchman from the last millennium, I think around 1000 A.D., he was taking Catholicism, which was the only religion in town at that time, up into the Nordic countries. I don't think it was always a peaceful process of Christianizing the pagan Norwegians. I think sometimes there was a little blood lit and a little bit of fire. So I think his legacy is mixed a bit. But anyway, he's the oldest one, so that's how he got so much fame.
Yeah, so the Vikings weren't into genuflecting at that time.
It was a tough thing for them to try, yes.
Yeah, well, they were wearing a lot of weird stuff. That's probably why.
That's true. It's true. Yeah.
Well, I read you're a Youper, but you're closing in on 40 years as a Minnesotan now.
Yeah, I'm retiring from St. Olaf this year. It's my last year after being here for 38. Yeah, I'm up in the Copper Country up in the UP, played the band up there in high school, and then went to Michigan mm-hmm. and got my academic degrees there, and then went on into the business. So.
Are you able to get pasties in Minnesota?
If you look hard enough. I think that some of the northern Minnesotan, what should we say, I don't know if they borrowed the culture from the UP, or actually they may have had a parallel existence, because there was a lot of the same immigrants up in the northern Minnesota that there were in the UP of Michigan. So I suppose that they probably mm-hmm. had pasties there, too.
Yeah. On the phone with Paul Niemisto. He is music director of the Norseman Band from St. Olaf College over in Minnesota. They are putting on a symphonic band concert next Friday, the 11th of March, 8 p.m. at the Mabel Tainter Center for the Arts. That's in Menominee, Wisconsin, of course. You have an affinity, Paul, for the music of Finland, probably for good reason, huh?
Well, it's my heritage. Yeah. I'm from the Finnish ghetto up in the UP, and so it came to me naturally. These are times when it's very interesting to be involved in Finnish music this next couple of years, because for one thing, we just are celebrating the 150th anniversary of the birth of Jan Sibelius mm-hmm. last year, 2015. And so I was personally involved through some brass groups that I have, and then also a little bit of programming with my band here, in making sure that people knew about that anniversary, because it was certainly celebrated in Finland and also in a lot of places around the United States. Many orchestras had little Sibelius festivals and so forth. Cool. And the other reason is that coming up in 2017, a lot of anniversaries seem to be coming up in this conversation, is the centennial of Finland. December 1917, Finland declared its independence from Russia in turmoil. And they have been an independent republic ever since. And so there's going to be a whole year of activities observing that, and I expect to be involved, too.
Sounds like a good time to be in Finland.
It will be.
Well, you're retiring just in time. You can get over there. So you're coming to the Mabel Tainter as guests of the Ludington Guard Band. Tell me about the term vintage band. You have a vintage band festival.
That's how we connected with Carol Runda and the Ludington Band. Yes, it started 10 years ago. Our town of Northfield here in Minnesota is just a beautiful, quaint town on the river with a lot of historic buildings and a kind of a sense of historic atmosphere. Uh-huh. And so a lot of the city graybeards were kind of sitting around moaning about, we should have a major music festival in this town. And I began to think about what my imagination and resources could come up with. And I thought about the fact that I had been going to conferences where historic band music was being discussed. And I thought maybe we could just do something and put it all together in Northfield. Yeah. And we did. And it was a smashing success. And it's going to be, again, we're having bands from Europe coming in and lots of Civil War over the shoulder bands. The one from Wisconsin is just outside of Madison. It's called the First Brigade Band of Wisconsin. It's about a huge, like a 40-piece Civil War band with blue uniforms and old restored instruments, and they're a lot of fun. That's how Ludington came over, because they have a historic aspect to their existence, too.
So a vintage band, they'll look the part, but they'll also play the part?
Yeah, they play authentic music of the era.
They do.
Although, you know, it's a wide variety of categories that are included, or what I include in vintage band, including... we're having a banda, a Mexican band from the Twin Cities coming down, and also a Balkan band, and we're going to have a Dixieland band, a New Orleans band, and then there's also a little community band festival on Sunday of the weekend. This is 28th to 31st of July, by the way.
Okay.
And so it's going to be an opportunity for people to hear lots of vintage historic music, and most of the bands are playing more than one time on the weekend, so various venues, so people can come here, and it's a little bit like a music fair.
Cool. Well, it sounds like fun. Make sure that we get, the brochures.
I'll plan on that.
You're playing next Friday in Menominee. That's the beginning of a busy Wisconsin weekend.
Pretty busy. I'm really thrilled to be performing in a historic auditorium theater like the Maple Teenager. I have a affinity for those places. I really like to be there. And there are not many of them around, so we want to celebrate them. We want to give them due respect and enjoy what they have to offer in terms of atmosphere and acoustics. I'm looking forward to it very much.
Yeah.
We're playing over in Grafton on the north side of Milwaukee on Saturday night, and then we're going to do a final performance at the Ascension Lutheran Church in Waukesha on Sunday.
That's great. Sounds like it'll be memorable for the young people in the band. Paul Niemisto, thanks so much for being with us here on Spectrum West. I appreciate it. Congratulations on your retirement. Enjoy your final year at St. Olaf, and please keep in touch with us here at Wisconsin Public Radio. It sounds like you're doing and have done some wonderful work over there.
Let's do it, and I hope that some of the listeners will meet with us and hear our music on Friday night, March 11th, Maple Teenager, Menominee, 8 o'clock, Norseman Band, be there.
Especially some St. Olaf alums, of which I hear there are several in this area.
There's two or three in Wisconsin, yeah.
Just a few. Thanks, Paul.
All right, bye-bye.
Paul Niemisto, recognized by the city of Northfield, Minnesota as a living treasure in the arts. Nice distinction to have, don't you think? Thanks, Ludington Guard Band, for sponsoring this concert. You can get tickets online at mabeltainter.org. Arts West 37 is 37. That's their birthday. Yeah, that's coming up next here on Wisconsin Public Radio and Spectrum West. Support for WPR comes from the Minnesota Marine Art Museum in Winona, presenting 10 exhibitions per year and home to masterworks by Monet, O'Keeffe, and Leutze's Washington Crossing the Delaware, mmam.org. Support also comes from the Chippewa Valley Symphony. Music from Star Wars, Harry Potter, Indiana Jones, and other movies is featured in the Youth Concert, 4:30 p.m. Saturday, March 12th. In Eau Claire's State Theater. Tickets at cvsymphony.org. Support also comes from the National Eagle Center in Wabasha, Minnesota, on the banks of the Mississippi, presenting Soar with the Eagles Festival weekends in March. A complete listing of events and exhibits is at nationaleaglecenter.org/events. Well, Arts West is a respected, juried art exhibit. This is the 37th year. It's now on display at various gallery locations within the L.A. Phillips Memorial Public Library in downtown Eau Claire. We invited the library's programming and communications director, Issa Small, to provide a look at what it gives and what it takes. Well, the history of Arts West, I'll bet you it's older than you are.
It is older than I am.
It sometimes a feat to keep things going that long. You must appreciate what it has taken to keep something going for 37 years.
Yes, definitely. I've worked at the library for a number of years. Last year was the first year I was able to be present for the reception. Mm-hmm. Before that, I had worked at the reference desk and the lower level. So there was a party going on that I wasn't part of.
Oh, darn.
So last year was the first year I really got to find out all of the stuff that it takes to get this program up and running and get the art on the walls and decide who's going to be there and make important decisions on cupcake flavors and that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
It has taken a long time, and it's definitely evolved along the way. I know every year, a week or two after Arts West, we get together and decide what worked this year, what didn't, what can we change for next year. So we're always tweaking it just a little bit to make it run more smoothly or make it a little more appetizing for the community.
Are you aware of the history? What was the brainchild that started it back in 79?
Mildred Larson, who has since retired from the library, she was kind of the force behind getting it started. It started as a fall show, and then the next year it was in the spring and has continued to be in the spring every year. But basically, the purpose of Arts West is twofold. It's a way for local and regional artists to be able to show everyone what they've been working on, and then also a way to have the community be able to experience the local art scene in a way that's familiar and comfortable to them.
So it's only local artists that are represented?
They're regional. Yeah. I think this year they are all from Wisconsin. In the past we've had some from Minnesota or further out.
It's a big undertaking. Talk about the process of finding a juror, because that's a big deal every year. And this year it's a gentleman who's originally from Scotland, I read.
So we're always looking for that balance in a juror, someone that's familiar with the art scene in this area and knows what to look for, because we really do want it to represent Wisconsin, you know, the northwestern Wisconsin art scene, but also not someone that is too familiar with the artists. So we rely on recommendations from our art committee. Okay. They put forth a few names, someone who that they know has juried a show before, or that they just know a little bit more about them. And then we review them and talk about them and then decide on who we're going to reach out to.
You probably have an ongoing list.
We do. Yeah, we've always got a couple of names in our back pocket.
Putting a show of this size together, not only finding the juror, but soliciting the work. Is it a year-long process?
It's pretty much a year-long process. We start looking for the juror probably, you know, early summer, late spring. And we are getting together and working with the university in early fall to get someone to design a poster for us, someone from their design class. And then from there, we're going right into designing all the promotional materials. And the call for artists actually goes out in early fall.
There's got to be a little bit of, I'm trying to come up with the right word, schmoozing sounds like it's a pretty good word to use, because being a juror for an art thing is not, that's not an easy undertaking. Are they paid to do it?
They are, yes. Okay. We receive funds from the Friends of the Library every year to pay for us to host the juror and then also to give out the cash prizes. So that helps a little bit in convincing them, but generally they are very happy to take on the task and dig down into our materials that we have to send them.
Cool. It's called Arts West. It's the 37th this year. It's up, and it's up through April 8th. And if you're listening to Spectrum West on Thursday, there's a reception this evening from 7 to 8:30 p.m. The juror will be there, and as many artists as possible will be there. Okay, and cupcakes.
And cupcakes, definitely.
Which is why I'm going, folks. What else is coming up at the library in Eau Claire? What else you got? What biggies are coming up?
Next week, we have a Writer's Read event. Yeah. We are featuring Jan Carroll and Jeannie Roberts, who will both be reading from their new poetry books. Mm-hmm. That is Tuesday evening at 7 p.m.
You and I had fun at a Writer's Read recently.
Did.
That was cool.
Yeah, very cool. DIY Dabble next week, and that is a monthly craft program for adults.
We're making DIY is a big, that's a big thing
it
nowadays.
Is.
Some people out there are saying, what's DIY? It's do-it-yourself. So do-it-yourself dabble is what? Sorry I interrupted you.
Nope, that's just fine. It's a monthly craft program for adults, because crafting isn't just for kids. And the best part about it is everything is free. We provide all of the materials and we provide instructions. So folks just need to register. And then when they show up, we've got everything there ready to go. And they don't have to spend an hour at Michael's trying to decide which, you know, supplies they need. And they don't have to pick up the glitter at the end, depending upon what the project is. So just get to do the craft and leave all the other stuff behind.
I get a lot of releases here at Spectrum West, and the Ellie Phillips Memorial Public Library sends as many as anyone, if not more.
We've got a lot of stuff going on. Yeah, absolutely.
Way to go. Issa Small, Programming and Communications Services Director at that library. Thanks.
Thank you.
The interactive website that represents this interactive outlet is ecpubliclibrary.info. Where would we be without our libraries? Support them, visit them, and always remind the next generation that, yes, you can find a lot of things pushing buttons on a device or a keyboard, but you can find all that and even more at your public library. Well, at the Northern Lakes Center for the Arts in Amory, Saturday, it's the Contest Kids, an evening of selections highlighting the talent of local young musicians competing in the Wisconsin School Music Association Contest. It's Saturday, 7:30 p.m. Also, an exhibit of work by Walter von Blaricom is up through March 5th. That's in Amory, of course. Well, you know, there's theater, there's dinner theater, Broadway dinner theater, and, as Jim Oliver reports, off-Broadway dinner theater.
The St. Croix Off-Broadway Dinner Theater in Hudson has selected Unnecessary Farce by Paul Slade Smith as a spring production. The show will open Friday, March 11th, and will continue Fridays and Saturdays through May the 20th. On the telephone to talk about Unnecessary Farce is the director and owner of the St. Croix Off-Broadway Dinner Theater, Jim Zimmerman. The promotional material for the show starts with Two Cops, Three Crooks, Eight Doors, Go! Well, that's your cue to introduce us to Unnecessary Farce.
Well, Unnecessary Farce is a wonderfully written classic farce with a contemporary story. It is an eight-door farce because the story takes place in two hotel rooms. The premise of it being a detective or a cop in a small town and his young assistant, a fresh new cop, are setting up a sting operation where they think they're going to sting the mayor of the small town, who they think is corrupt and has stolen some money from the community. And so they've set up the sting room where the interview of the mayor is going to take place, and the cop room set up with the video recording equipment, and they're all set to do this sting operation on the mayor, and they brought in the city accountant to do an interview in the sting room with the mayor and catch him in his error. Well, of course, as with any farce, that is not in reality the case. I can't go into the details of what actually happens. I have to throw out a spoiler alert because that's all part of the fun.
Mm-hmm.
But the premise is very good, and it's eight doors because there are, of course, the main door for each of the two rooms, hotel rooms, closet doors, bathroom doors, and the connecting door or doors between the two rooms.
Oh, my gosh. Paul Slade Smith, I looked into his background a little bit. He did some work over in Door County with the Peninsula Players some time ago. Did you ever run into him over there when you were doing your stuff over there once upon a time?
You know, I didn't, but I did hear his name roughly the time when we were there. You know, Door County, although it's small, we all tend to be in our own little cocoon doing madly what we do over there until we moved our theater to Hudson, Wisconsin. But I did not work with him, and I did know of him. I've never met him.
Well, that was leading up to the question is why the play was selected, other than the fact that it's a terrific farce.
The reason we selected the play was actually referenced from an old professor of mine in graduate school who keeps me apprised of wonderful scripts, and every one that he sends me to read is a gem. And this is no exception to that. Unnecessary Farce came out in 2006, has been produced around the country, and you can't swing a dead cat without hitting a theater that hasn't done Unnecessary Farce. And I guess it was just our turn at St. Croix Off-Broadway to do it. Once I read it, I knew we had to do it.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any cast members familiar to your regular theater growers over there?
Well, for our regular theater goers, yeah. Michael McKay, who has done all of the Don't Hug Me series of musicals, he played Canute in that show, is playing one of the central characters, the cop. And Brittany Oberstad, I think this is her sixth show. Most recently, Brittany was in 1940's Radio Christmas Carol. Dan Rooney, who was in Righteous, the original production about the Righteous Brothers, who played Bill Medley in that show, the senior Bill Medley. Mm. Augusta Thrift is coming back after a five-year absence. She got married and established a career, and they decided to want to come back and work with us a little bit. Augusta was on stage at a variety of shows. So, there's a number of folks that are working with us. Red Reese Nord, who most recently did Love Letters for us about a year ago. It's a cast of seven, and I think all seven have done shows with us before.
Great. He is Jim Zimmerman, who is director of the St. Croix Off-Broadway Dinner Theater production of Unnecessary Farce. Well, going back to The Doors just a little bit, years ago I was in the cast of a farce entitled No Sex, Please, We're British.
Beautiful play.
And about halfway through the second act of one of the performances, one of the doors came off of its bottom hinge. And it was then I realized that a farce requires a really competent crew of set builders, and I assume you have that all under control.
Well, we've been building madly, and yes, you have to make those doors absolutely rock hard and functional. I felt as we were constructing it that we were actually building a house, and you know, if you look at the set when it's finished, it looks every bit as finished as any hotel room. When those doors close, they close solid. In fact, last night we were doing a run-through of it. One of the characters, one of the actors, is supposed to run into a door, and it knocks him out. Well, the character ran into the door, and it was being closed by somebody on the other side as part of the business. Mm-hmm. Of course, they close it. Their timing was a little off, and his head went into the door. And, of course, it's a hollow core door, and so he stuck his head right through the door. So I'm going up to the theater this afternoon and going to fix a door.
Well, as long as it's now and not during one of the performances, all's well.
But with eight doors, one of the common questions is asked every single rehearsal, now do I leave the door open or closed when I go through it?
Oh, boy. Well, we're not breaking any news here, but you have retired from your position as professor of theater at the University of Wisconsin River Falls. And I guess I can't let you go without just finding out, aside from what's going on with the dinner theater, what else are you up to?
Well, the dinner theater occupies a lot of my time. We produce four shows there a year, and some of them I write and produce. All of them I produce and direct. Beyond that, I've been working on a rewrite of the musical Righteous / its new name is That Love and Feelin', which we produced at St. Croix Off-Broadway a year or so ago. That has been produced out in L.A., so I've been commuting out there and rewriting for them. It had an extended run and broke all their box office records, so, of course, everybody out there wants to do it.
Mm.
But I'm also working on writing another musical and just keeping busy.
Oh, that's great. Well, I saw the original Righteous, the story of the Righteous Brothers. I didn't get to see That Love and Feeling. I enjoyed it very much, and I was just wondering how drastic of a change did you make in the second version of it?
Well, it is the same story, different things emphasized. The nice thing about having a show produced is you get feedback. Of course, we have the L.A. Press, L.A. Times, and all the other papers go and see it, and they reviewed it, and you get criticism back from them, positive and constructive,
mm-hmm.
and that all factors into it. Plus, when I sit in the back of the theater or I talk to people in the lobby, they don't know who I am, and I can get a pretty honest reflection on what works and what doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
So when I came back here, I'm now rewriting it again after the L.A. production. To answer your question, probably a little bit more has been dramatized in the relationship between Bill Medley and Bobby Hatfield as they developed their relationship or lack of relationship, their antagonism towards each other. And a little less from the version that you saw is actually sort of narrated or told from the perspective of Bill Medley, senior 63-year-old Bill Medley, going through an interview process. So you'll see more and probably hear less talked about and more shown to you.
Mm-hmm. Just out of curiosity, a friend of mine is a director, a longtime director. He always used to say he doesn't care about reviews in the newspaper.
Well, as long as they spell my name right, I'm happy with it. you know, they have a job to do. You can tell the people, we call them the pick-apart reviews, where they can't find anything they like, and they seem to be more into displaying their own expertise or lack thereof mm-hmm. than about telling what they thought was good or bad in the show. But if the review is critical, in a constructive sense, and most of them are. I actually like reading reviews, whether they're constructive or praising or whatever, and 90% of them out there in L.A. were very positive. And so the constructive comments I take to heart and go back in and see if there's merit in it and see if I can do anything to strengthen the script in that regard.
Well, in the interest of full disclosure, I ought to say that I used to write reviews for newspapers, particularly in western Pennsylvania, where I used to review shows at a professional summer stock theater, which was fun because they had actors coming from New York and Pittsburgh and all over the place. So,
it's a tough job to do because on one hand, you've got to be graceful and promote theater in general. I mean, that's part of your job. That's why people read reviews as mm-hmm. to whether decide whether to go to shows or not. But by the same token, you can't be dishonest about what was good or bad in a show, and your job is to tell it like it is.
Well, we've been talking to Jim Zimmerman, who is director of the St. Croix Off-Broadway Dinner Theater production of Unnecessary Farce. The show opens Friday, March the 11th, and continues Fridays and Saturdays through May the 20th in the theater in the Best Western Hudson House over in Hudson. Jim Zimmerman, thanks so much for being with us.
Well, thank you.
The website is stcroixoffbroadway.com. And thanks to the two Jims for gracing the first March 2016 edition of Spectrum West. Still to come, Echo Swings Italian and the incomparable sound of Kenny Holman. He'll hit the Menominee city limits pretty soon. Here's a Spectrum memo. Arts faculty at UW River Falls present their artwork and research in a special partnership exhibition with the Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson, Wisconsin, beginning Friday and running through April 10th. There's an opening reception Friday as well at 6:30, of course, at the Phipps. Saturday evening, Grace Lutheran Church in Eau Claire will radiate the sound of the Eau Claire Chamber Orchestra with special guests, the UWEC Women's Concert Chorale, and more. The evening also features a special guest conductor, Frank A. Watkins, assistant professor of choral music and music education at UW Eau Claire. He took a few minutes out of a busy day to bring us up to speed, and I don't mind if you listen in on our call. Masterpieces from the Italian Baroque. As guest conductor, did you have a hand in planning the concert as well?
I did. I actually picked all the repertoire for the concert. A couple pieces that I've loved for a long time, the Stabamato by Pergolesi is one of the great engines in the repertoire, and I've always wanted the chance to perform that work. So when this opportunity came about, I jumped on it to do this great work and to give a nice performance of it again.
Wonderful. So Saturday night, this concert features, as guests, the UW Eau Claire Women's Concert Chorale. Are these students of yours?
That's correct. That is the women's ensemble here on campus. It's composed of about 60 young women from across the campus, some music majors, but primarily non-music majors. They meet for an hour, 4 days a week, and perform several concerts throughout the year. Decided to feature them on this concert as well.
Is there a difference conducting a vocal group as opposed to an instrumental ensemble?
Not necessarily. I think conducting is conducting all the way around. I think, you know, our job as conductors is to interpret the music and make music as much as we can. So regardless of who we're standing in front of, whether it be an orchestral ensemble or wind ensemble or a vocal ensemble, we're still there to create and make music.
Every time I've seen someone conducting a choral group, it's fun to watch from the choral group's perspective because so often the conductor is very animated and singing along and smiling, and that's something you learn or that's just you can't help it?
I think it depends on the conductors themselves. I think, you know, some conductors, that's just their style. That's just their personality, and that's what they bring to the music. So, you know, for some pieces, I'm sure that I'm more animated than I am for other pieces as well. But I think it just depends on the style of the conductor and what they bring to the music.
Uh-huh. You have an affinity. You have a love for Italian Baroque. Was the theme of the concert already picked, and then you had to fill it, or did you choose the theme as well?
I chose the theme. When I got the opportunity, I thought about, you know, what I wanted to perform, and the first thing that kind of popped into my head was Pergolesi, was the Stabamato. Then I thought, you know, what could we pair with that? How could we make a theme maybe around this one central work? So I spoke with Dr. Garvey, who's actually my next-door neighbor as far as our offices are next door to each other. And asked her if she'd be interested in playing on the concert as well. So we had the idea of doing the Cimarosa, the Opus Concerto. So it kind of spawned from the idea of, you know, featuring the Sabbatmater and then kind of pairing works around it to make it an entire cohesive evening.
So you've already mentioned Krista Garvey as a guest. You have a few others. Who are they?
Sure. We have two soloists, Kate Bew, who's a mezzo here on campus, and Gina Cruciani, who's a soprano. They're both music majors. They're both students, but they're both music majors, and they'll be singing some solo repertoire within the Sabbatmater as well.
You have Susan Halderman and Ben Cheney and Ryan Poquette as well.
We're doing the Vivaldi Concerto Grosso, which he wrote for three solo instruments and ensemble. So those three that you mentioned are playing the solo pieces within the Vivaldi Concerto.
So someone comes out of college with a degree and has the ability to mentor choral music. Were you an instrumentalist along the way as well?
Correct. I played piano all since I was a young child. I was actually a piano major in school. And I also doubled in bassoon. So I played bassoon for many years and piano. Yes, to answer your question, I'm an instrumentalist as well as a vocalist.
Assistant professor of choral music and music education. The music education part means you teach and have classes for people who will become music teachers.
Correct, correct. Okay. Teaching future teachers.
And I understand that music education is a very well-rounded thing. I mean, people coming out of college with degrees in music education, they have to know a lot of stuff about a lot of different kinds of music, don't they?
Absolutely. It's a comprehensive degree. I mean, you really have to know a lot about everything. You have to be, you know, pretty skilled and well-versed in all areas of music, especially if you plan to teach in the public school or going to grad school and beyond. So we really pride ourselves here at UW-Eau Claire for our strong music education program and the fact that we produce so many great students and have students that go on to have great careers. Our placement when students graduate is 100%. So we're very proud of what we do here at the university and proud of our students.
Frank A. Watkins, Assistant Professor, Choral Music, Music Education, UW-Eau Claire. He's the guest conductor for Masterpieces from the Italian Baroque, the Eau Claire Chamber Orchestra Concert. It is Saturday night, 7:30 p.m., and it's at Grace Lutheran Church. Thank you so much for being with us on Spectrum West. Keep in touch. We want to talk to you again.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Information and ticket purchase is online at EauClaireChamberOrchestra.org. Well, he plays the saxophone like very few others, and he's sharing his experiences with high schoolers. That's just around the corner on Spectrum West. Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from Luther College, where nearly 1,000 students, both music and non-music majors, participate in 6 choirs, 3 bands, and opera performances. More information at luther.edu. Support also comes from Mayo Clinic Health System, bringing Mayo Clinic care to communities throughout western Wisconsin with specialties such as cardiology and heart surgery. Information is on the web at mayoclinichealthsystem.org. While you're wondering what's on stage in western Wisconsin, something different to do with an evening, I know just the guy with that information. Here's Jim Oliver.
Thanks, Al. The Chippewa Valley Theater Guild will present The Cemetery Club through Sunday at the Grand Theater in Eau Claire. A dinner theater production of An Impeccable Larceny will be staged by the Neillsville Area Players today, Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday at the Parkway Pine Supper Club in Greenwood. The Old Gem Theater of New Richmond will stage Number of the Stars weekdays for student audiences through March 21st. Pippin will be staged by the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire Theater through Saturday at the Keir Theater on the campus of the university. The White Snake will be staged today, Thursday, through Saturday by the University of Wisconsin-River Falls Theater. The Eau Claire Children's Theater will present the musical Camelot through Sunday at the State Theater in Eau Claire. The Wide Spot Players will present the mystery comedy The Butler Did It Friday and Saturday at the Wide Spot Performing Arts Center in Stockholm. And the Eau Claire Children's Theater will hold auditions for Fancy Nancy Sunday and Monday at 5:30 p.m. This is Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Jim Oliver.
Well, here's the other event coming to the Mabel Tainter in Menominee. It's even younger people than the St. Olaf College folks. These are high schoolers, members of the Menominee High School Jazz Ensemble 1, welcoming back saxophone sensation Kenny Holman, whom you're listening to right now. It's next Tuesday, March 8th. Jake Karkula and his gang putting together a stellar lineup of music and musicians. We talked with Kenny Holman just the other day. You're going to be playing with some high school musicians in Menominee. You've done that before, I see, about 4 years ago. I'm going to surmise, Kenny, that this kind of concert brings back some fond memories for you. Someone as accomplished as you must have had some nice help building a good musical foundation way back when, huh?
Oh, I really did. I grew up in Minnetonka, and there's a band director named Dan Geldick, who was really kind of instrumental in getting me started, and he was trying out some different things on the piano, and I was practicing in the back room, and he started playing a couple of phrases, and then I started copying him, and he started playing a couple of phrases, and I copied him. So he said, Kenny, come in here. I thought, well, whoops, maybe I was playing too loud or something. But he said, can you tell me what note this is? So he'd play a C, and that would be, for me, it was a D on tenor sax. And he kept going with this. He said, Kenny, I think you have perfect pitch. And that's kind of when I found out I had perfect pitch and started copying a lot of music. And him kind of bringing that to my awareness brought some other interesting things musically for me. And we had done some jazz festivals, and we did the Eau Claire Jazz Festival and a number of different things in high school. So that was really a key for me to get started in the high school jazz ensemble.
I love use of the word instrumental, too. He was instrumental in my... that's kind of
yeah, neat. Where's the drummer, right?
Neat way of saying it.
Yeah, that's true.
What about before high school? Were you a musician then? But it was this guy that inspired you, took you to a new level?
I started in fifth grade, and I didn't really pursue it very strongly. I was doing a lot of sports, and that was consuming a lot of my time, but still playing in the band. When we finally got to probably about my junior year, I had broken a collarbone and had this kind of a sling on, and it just was perfect where I can still put my arms around a saxophone and still play without any pain. So, well, this is safer than hockey, so I just kept practicing and got in the jazz ensemble, and that was kind of a start.
Plus, you've never broken your collarbone playing the sax.
Hopefully not. You know, some of these tough bars or something, I suppose, but you never know.
I have to say, I was at your website. Your list of things that you've done and people with whom you've played and collaborated is about as eclectic as one can get, I think. If you go down the list of artists that you've backed and recorded with, reading gets to the Reverend Billy Graham Crusade, and that stands out. I've never been to one. Are they known for great music?
Yes, they put together usually a large orchestra, very well orchestrated music. I think the worship part of that is really important for the whole coming together in his crusade. And the orchestra was quite large, but they also had several hundred singers all in the stands and the seats. So it's like this huge kind of a heavily choir type thing. But yeah, their music was very important.
Goes along with the notion, and not just a notion, but the fact that music is and can be very inspirational and emotional. We've all felt it watching motion pictures.
For sure. I my favorite musical moments was with Doc Severinsen. We have done a number of things together, a small group, but also playing with some orchestras, and including the Minnesota Orchestra, and just after 9/11. And they grounded all the planes in the countries in the state of shock. We had ended a concert with Amazing Grace. And at the end, Doc hits this double D, and for me, I can, you know, with altissimo, I can hit a triple D. And then the orchestra all hit the note behind it. It was just this powerful moment, and people stood up and they were weeping. And I think just because of the state of it, you know, America was in at that time, and the power that music can have to move people together. And I just remember, I still kind of get choked up thinking about it, but that was probably one of the most powerful moments, and music can do that for sure.
We're enjoying a phone conversation with Kenny Holman, saxophonist extraordinaire, playing at the Mabel Tainter in Menominee, Wisconsin, with the Menominee High School Jazz Ensemble 1. That's next Tuesday, the 8th of March. It's at 7:30 p.m. You know, I've also never seen Lori Lyne, although I might rethink that now that I know it's not just an attractive lady on stage with a piano. You've played with her.
Yes, she's very talented, and she has a real gift of constructing shows and putting things together, and I had the pleasure of working with her for several years. And there's a part in the show where she does a medley, and her ability to weave from one song into another, you know, she'll get a request list and then she'll just weave all these things together, and mm-hmm. it's like magic. She's really good.
You've recorded with a bunch of icons. I alluded to that a while ago without naming them. Here are some: Janet Jackson, Rod Stewart, Prince, Gladys Knight, and others. It was cool for me to see Ben Sidran on that list. You know, upon seeing his name, I was taken back to some album tracks that I played late night on the radio decades ago, and found him online and then found the album that I have in a peach crate somewhere. I think our audience, Kenny, would be interested to know what a high-profile recording session is like. Rod Stewart, okay. Okay, so he says, I'm going to do an album. How are you contacted? How are you provided the charts? How's it all put together?
Of course, each session is different. Sometimes there are charts provided. Sometimes there's not. Sometimes they just ask you to jam with the track, so to speak. And in that case, with Rod Stewart, it was a Jimmy Jam, Terry Lewis thing when they were in town in Minneapolis. Sure. That's where that session was. And they had someone writing charts. I think they had string orchestra and all sorts of different things. Hmm. So you have to really be able to read music, you know, do a lot of shows at the Ordway and Broadway shows and different things and mm-hmm. with the orchestra. But you also have to use your ear and learn to improvise and, you know, come up with some unique ideas. I think that you get the call because they figure that that's something that you can bring to the table. So each session is a little different. And sometimes the, you know, like the studio is quite elaborate. You know, Paisley Park is an amazing place. It's several different studios and several million dollars worth of space. And then it can be something simple. We've recorded Prince stuff at Mike Nelson, who's trombone player, kind of like the lead horn head, does the writing. Mm-hmm. And it'll be at his house and maybe in the basement, and we'll float tracks back and forth. The beauty nowadays is that, if, let's say someone, we've done several different tracks from people around the world, they can Skype us and we can record and send tracks back and forth. So physically, you don't always have to be there anymore, but some of the high-profile sessions, it's really a nice big studio.
On Tuesday, you're playing with the Menominee High School Jazz Ensemble 1. Becoming known and getting skilled in music, as we talked previously, is all about paying some dues, practice, rehearsal, and the old word, fundamentals. It appears as if this high school jazz ensemble has the right idea. They have, if you're aware of this or not, an early bird class every day at 6:40 a.m. That's every day. That's not easy stuff. That's dedication.
Right. You know, if you're willing to spend the hours in early in the morning, because that's when you're given that time, then you really have something special, because then you have the drive and desire to really make something excellent. And I know Jake is excited, and you know, working with the students from Menominee in the past, I mean, everybody is just, you know, really enthused about the music and really wants to promote jazz and rock music, and it is America's art form. I mean, that's where it came from, and it's neat when you travel abroad. People always want to know about jazz, and you know, always ask questions. But I always tell the students, you know what, you preparing for this is not just, you know, a short term thing. It's something that you can use for the rest of your life. So it's cool that they're working that hard. It's going to be fun. It's just, we had a really big show at the McNally Smith about a month ago, and there's kind of a link on that where there's some highlights and some interviews and different things, but it was with the Jazz Minnesota Orchestra, which is mm-hmm. really cool orchestra. Just was a great event, and I'm hoping for the same excitement at the Mabel Tainer Center.
People all over America are becoming pretty aware of how good young musicians are in Wisconsin. It's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's funny, too. I think, especially in this day and age, the opportunity to hear anything just from YouTube, or just asking any question about, you know, modes or scales or patterns or anything, there's always an answer. So I think to be able to get something, you know, information-wise is so accessible now that it's really helping young musicians.
Ah, we live in a wonderful age, don't we?
It's got its ups and downs, but But you know what? If the technology is right, it can really improve things.
We love talking about jazz. We love talking about music. And we have enjoyed talking to you, Kenny Holman. Thanks for being with us on Spectrum West. We are fans now. We're going to be following you closer than we have in the past, I promise.
Oh, I certainly appreciate it. Thank you very much, Al.
Kenny Holman on Sex with the Menominee High School Jazz Ensemble 1, Tuesday, March 8th, 7:30 p.m., the marvelous Mabel Tainter Center. Tickets by phone, at the ticket office in person, or by visiting the website mabeltainter.org. Couple of Spectrum memos, reminders, the final concert in the artist series at UW Eau Claire presents Black Oak Ensemble next Tuesday evening, 7:30, Gantner Concert Hall, Haas Fine Arts Center on campus. From Bach to the Balkans, it's a quartet you'll remember. Tickets at the Service Center, by phone at 836-INFO and online at uwec.ly/tickets. River Falls High School, Middle School, and UW River Falls art students, handmade bowls will hold soups served by area restaurants at the 2016 Bowls for Hope event. That is next Tuesday, March 8th, from 5 to 7 p.m. at UW River Falls. Come pick out a bowl, have some soup, keep the bowl, and help raise money for the Assistance and Resource Center, this year's benefiting charity. Well, got to say thanks for Wickland's Words, Brown's Ballyhooing, and Collenbach's Control. Just every week, it's couldn't do it without you. Coming up next week, Jerry Way has a spring Heidi Center show to tell us about. That's an annual. We'll delve into the use of music and jogging and maintaining memory. And more. Always more on Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross. Thanks again for your support during the winter pledge drive, and thanks for spending part of your day with us here at Wisconsin Public Radio. See you next week.